Welcome to the Fairhaven Church Sermons Podcast. Fairhaven is a part of Harbor Churches, a multi-site church located in West Michigan, and we exist to help people find their way back to God. We hope this message helps you to take your next step in your faith journey. Thanks for joining us.
I don't know if you ever do this, but once in a while I think about the world that we live in and think, I would like to see that changed. And I would love to see that be different. Or I'd love this place that looks like it's so painful to find some hope and some life kind of breathed into it. And I don't know if you do that. You ever think about, if there was something I could do that would change the world, I would do it. And this morning, I want to tell you that there absolutely is something you can do about whatever it is that you're thinking about in terms of changing the world. And it may not happen overnight. It may not happen in your lifetime. But I do believe, because we've seen it before, that there is something that you could do to actually see the world become a different place, that we could collectively do together that could make the world a better place. Before we jump into that, I want to ask a question. How many of us have ever watched History's Greatest Mysteries on TV, the series? Anybody? All right, we got a few of us that have watched it. And I haven't watched all of it. I just watched a couple of them, but it's a five seasons long series of TV programs around some of the greatest mysteries on the earth, and like Stonehenge. And I didn't watch that one, but I've been to Stonehenge, and when you look at it, it's out in the middle of a field, and you walk out there, and it's kind of cool to look at because you got these really like odd-shaped, straight, big rocks that go straight up in the air, and then there's others that are laying on top of it, and you start to ask, like, how do they do that? And it goes from how to why. Like, not how did they do it, but why did they do it? And what did they do when they ended up building this thing? And the question, even the guide will tell you, is a mystery. We don't know. We actually don't know what this is or why it's there. Have some guesses, but that's about it. It's why it's one of the world's greatest mysteries right there. Or Area 51, like what happens in Area 51? Or the Bermuda Triangle, like boats go in and they don't come out and they end up with programs like the SS Minnow and Gilligan's Island. Like what happened here, right? And we have the Amelia Earhart one where she's flying her plane around the world and loses contact and then all of a sudden she's gone and we can't find her. And we look, it's a mystery. But the greatest mystery, I think we could probably build a pretty good case for it, the greatest mystery of all times, they didn't cover, though they had five seasons to cover it and multiple shows, but a guy named Bart Ehrman actually covered the greatest mystery of all times. You're like, who is this guy? Well, in 2018, he published a book, and the subtitle of the book is this right here. How did a forbidden religion sweep the world? How a forbidden religion swept the world. In question form, it would be, how did that happen? And that's what he posed in his book. Now, what makes it fascinating is Ehrman is actually an atheist, and he's studying this going, what the world happened? What in this world happened that a first century rabbi with a group of like 12 or so Galileans ended up sweeping the world with change, massive change, cultural shift that happened in the ancient world? How did this group of forbidden religious leaders, a rabbi with 12 or so Galileans, how did they lead a movement that was so subversive and powerful that it undid the greatest power of that day, the Roman Empire, who exerted enormous, enormous power in the world at that time for like 1,500 years? They were on the throne of power with an emperor. How did this group, without even lifting a weapon, take out Rome and flip it upside down? How did this small band of brothers go out with some of the sisters and begin to make a shift that was so massive that in that region of the world at that time, there were so many gods that you couldn't swing a stick in that area without hitting one, a pantheon of gods. And It went from the worship of all these different gods to the worship of an ancient or a first century at that time rabbi who got crucified and then resurrected. How did they do it? How did that happen? And the answer to that is actually embedded in the Christmas story. A mystery to some, history to some. And in the story, what we don't find is what often feels like Christmas to us. We find that, but there's more that we're going to uncover here in just a bit and then throughout the next weeks here, because there is a revolution of love that got launched, a subversive kingdom that got launched here at Christmas time. And it's not about the trees and the lights. It's not about the smells of the kitchen. And it's not about well wishes and gifts. It is about a subversive kingdom that actually shaped the world and launched a movement that left the world absolutely forever changed. And it began sort of in the way that we think about it when we think about the storytelling of like Charlie Brown and Linus standing there with a blue blanket, just this side of kind of sucking his thumb, and it's cute, and we listen to the language, and it gives us all the feels of Christmas. I want to read that again, but instead of the feels of what we often feel when we think about Christmas, let's pay attention. So Luke chapter 2, it reads like this, and we're going to take a few pauses here. In those days, Caesar Augustus, can you almost hear Linus, issued a decree that a census should be taken of the entire Roman world. And wait a minute. Why? We're talking about the birth of Jesus, baby Jesus into this world. And we're talking about a God breaking. Why are we starting with the emperor of Rome? Why are we starting with the king and his great kingdom? Why are we starting with an emperor, Caesar Augustus, who is issuing a command to the people that are in the great empire or a terrible empire, depending on how you look at it, of Rome? And that power that he had to be obeyed or was met with enormous force. The force of life and death itself. In those days, Caesar Augustus, most powerful man on earth, issued a command that a census, I want to count my people in my world, should be taken of the entire Roman world. And everyone went to their own town to register. So Joseph also went up from the town of Nazareth in Galilee to Judea, to Bethlehem, the town of David, wait a minute, another king. There's two kings. First, we've got the emperor that's talked about. Now, this one. King David was second king of Israel, and he ruled. Why is his name in this story as well? Went to the town of David because he belonged to the house and to the line of David. He went there to register with Mary, who was pledged to be married to him and was expecting a child. While they were there, the time came for a baby to be born, and she gave birth to her firstborn, a son. She wrapped him in cloths and placed him in a manger because there was no guest room available for them. And there were shepherds living out in the fields nearby, keeping watch over their flocks at night. An angel of the Lord appeared to them, and the glory of the Lord shone around them, and they were terrified. But the angel said to them, "Do not be afraid. I bring you good news that will cause great joy for all people. Today in the town of David, a Savior has been born to you. He is the Messiah, the Lord. This will be a sign to you. You will find a baby wrapped in cloths and lying in a manger." Just the highlights here today. We're gonna get into this series, but I want to give some highlights on this story right here as we move from kingdom to kingdom through this thing, because it starts not with the tree, as I said, not with the lights, not even with a manger. It starts with the enormity of power. It starts with a man named Caesar Augustus. And Caesar was a king. Caesar had a kingdom, and that Caesar gave an order. He issued a decree. As such, because he was the king that was in power, when you issue a decree as the emperor, as the king, as the ruler of Rome, people moved. They had a choice to make, move or meet up with his power. And you didn't want the latter. And so what happened was he gave an order because in his kingdom, he wanted to know how many people. The order went out to his world so that he could count how big is my kingdom. How massive is this group of people that are under my thumb? How many do they number that are subject to me and to my authority? When you live in Caesar's world, you obey Caesar's command. When you live in Caesar's world, you do as Caesar says. Your kingdom that you belong to is actually dictated by your king. And as such, not only did those that wanted to be under Rome's authority, wanted to belong to it or benefited from it, but also the Israelites. Much of the Israelites were under this authority as well. Even Mary and Joseph, and we read these words, Caesar gave an order to his world and Joseph went. He also went up from the town of Nazareth in Galilee to Judea, to Bethlehem, the town of David, because he belonged to the house and to the line of David. Why David? Let's pick up on that one, that highlight in the story. We've got Caesar. We have his power. We have his kingdom. We have his rule. Now we have David. And what about David? Why is he in the story? And what do we know about David? Well, if we were to back up, way back to the history of Israel and get to the beginning of this nation, we find they don't have a king. They don't have one that's ruling over them. Other nations do. Other nations have a king, but if you were to ask somebody that was from Israel, tell us about your king, they would say, well, we kind of don't have a king. You know, like what we have, we're different. We're a holy nation. We're a royal priesthood of believers that follow Yahweh, follow God. What we have a prophet. And the prophet goes to God on our behalf, but listens to God and comes back and speaks God's commands to us as well. And so we are, I guess you could say God's our king. We're led by God, not by a person. We're led by Yahweh. He is our leader of this nation, this people. Makes us different than other nations. And there was a point at which they went, wait a minute, we're different than other nations. And the elders of Israel came together and they had a conversation about that. And like, man, we look at these other nations and they have a king that actually goes before them into battle, and the king is a warrior, and he'll take them into battle. We don't have one of those. We just have a prophet that talks to God, and God talks to the prophet, and the prophet talks to us. And what do you think? And eventually they said, we think it's a good idea. We actually think we should have a king as well. And so the elders of Israel actually wanted that. And here's what we know. We know to be true is this, that in order to understand your kingdom, you have to understand your king. In order to understand the Roman Empire, let's understand who the emperor was and how the emperor operated. And we understand this is the way, the power of the emperor, this is the way of the kingdom that he's in. David, now, being a king, we'll get to that one, but these people started asking, wait a minute, we don't have a king, let's get a king. And so the elders went to the prophet, his name was Samuel, and they asked Samuel these words, or actually spoke to him these words right here. Appoint a king to lead us, such as all the other nations have. Samuel, we need a king like the other nations have. What do the other nations have? Well, they had pretty powerful kings that would lead them, go before them. And so when they were asking that, they were asking of Samuel that they would be as the other nations would be. And Samuel's like, no. We don't want that. We are God's people. We're a holy nation. We follow him. And eventually Samuel went to God himself and shared his heart with God, like, Lord, look what these people are asking for. And the Lord responded to Samuel with these words right here, saying, it is not you, Samuel, that they have rejected, but they have rejected me as their king. They're doing just as they have always done. Go ahead. Make it happen. But warn them. Warn them. You're not going to like it. You are going to have buyer's regret on this one. I will tell you, you are not going to like what you purchase. And so they did. They started looking for a king. And when they were looking for a king, you kind of know what they would look for, right? You know what they're going to go after. They're looking for a king that would do this. In verse 20, it says that they were looking for a king that would lead them into battle. That would lead them into battle. Lead us and go before us and fight our battles, which is another way of saying, I cleaned this up for our church here today, but another way of saying this, that we want a king to kick cabooses and take names. That's what we want, right? We want someone that can kick some tail and take names. We want a guy that's big and bad. We want a guy that can lead the charge. We want, maybe we don't want the emperor, but he has a lot of power, but we want one that has the kind of power that can go out and lead us into battle. And what they're looking for, literally, was somebody that's taller, bigger, badder than others, and they found him. They found one that was taller than anybody else, a head taller than others. He was handsome. He's the most, he is the most eligible bachelor in all of Israel. We found him big, muscular, strong. Let's make Saul our king. And so they did. And then, as God warned them, you're not going to like it. You're not going to like it. They didn't. Again, here's the reality. In order to understand your kingdom, I'm talking about yours now, not theirs. In order to understand your kingdom, the kingdom that you actually live in, you have to understand your king. And in this case, they elected one that they wanted to follow. They called one. They anointed one king over Israel, the first one. And eventually God got to the place when, time out. I'm not okay with this guy and how he's leading the nation. You're my people. And he rejected Saul as the king. You did not choose as you should have chosen. And it led you to where I warned you it would lead you. My turn. I'll choose the next king. And so to Samuel, he sent him in conversation to go have conversation with the sons of a man named Jesse. And so Jesse's over there. He's got 8 sons, and he has the sense like maybe this is going to be the next one that gets anointed king over Israel. And Jesse sends the one that he thinks. And Sammy goes, that's the one. That's the one. Here he comes. He's tall. He's big. He's strong. He's handsome. Must be the next king. And God says, nope, not that one. In order to understand your kingdom, the kingdom that you live in and I live in, we have to understand our king. And this king is not thinking the way, not looking the same way that Samuel was looking, the Israelites were looking, all these other nations are looking. He's got a different angle on this. And the scripture tells us this is how God responded. Samuel, do not look at his appearance or height. The Lord does not look at the things people look at. People look at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. The Lord looks at the heart. Again, to understand your kingdom, you have to understand your king. This is your king that is speaking here. I don't look at people the way others look at people. I don't look at this world in the same way that so many do. I look at it differently. Look to the heart. And so he went after the heart. and one after another, all the first seven of Jesse's sons, not that one, not that one, not that one, not that one, up to the point where Samuel says, Jesse, have you no other sons? Because I thought it was, you sent me all your sons. He goes, well, there's this other one that's out in the field. I mean, he's little, there's not much to him. I don't know, he's young. Doesn't seem like he would be the one, but he's out in the field, he's with the sheep, he's just a shepherd. And Samuel goes out there and God says, this one is the one that is absolutely after my heart. This one right here. In order to understand your kingdom, you have to understand your king. This king, and I'm not talking about Caesar anymore. I got it. We got how Caesar operated, just a highlight of it. We get how Saul got chosen, a highlight of people's bent toward strength and power and might and looks and the outward appearance. And we get that God says, that's not me. That's not me. I don't look that way. I look to the heart. That is what really matters to me. In order to understand your kingdom, the one that you live in, you're going to have to understand your king. And when you think about your king, what do you think about? What's he like? Oh, he was born in a manger. I mean, they're kings of this world. To approach them, especially those with enormous power of life and death in their word, to step toward their throne, that's dangerous territory. You hold your words carefully and you speak only when spoken to in those moments, and it's hard to approach that kind of throne. This throne, a manger throne, a little baby. Anybody can come speak to a baby. Anyone. In order to understand your kingdom, you have to understand your king. If you can back up to that one before, thank you. You have to understand your king. What else? Well, let's have a marketing strategy for the subversive kingdom that would actually shape the world. How in the world did a rabbi and 12 of his students, Galileans, change the whole world? How would they do that? Well, we need a marketing strategy. What is it? Well, let's tell the shepherds first out in the field. What? Why would you tell the shepherds? They're the least. They're at the bottom rung of society. You should tell somebody that can trumpet blast us and get the news out. Now let's start with them. Will people believe them? Maybe not, because shepherds weren't the most believable people in society. They couldn't even testify in a court of law. But in order to understand your kingdom, you have to understand your king, right? You have to understand your king, and he starts with, I'll bring good news of great joy. For who? All? Them? What else? What else do you see? Well, as he grew and became older, one that was interested in the very things of God in this world. In order to understand your kingdom, you have to understand your king. And this one, he started acting differently than other people, like the people that came into homes that were of high rank, and especially like a rabbi. You never wash somebody's feet, and Jesus takes a towel and says, I'll wash your feet. Like, no, I don't want you to wash my feet. Yeah, but if I don't wash your feet, maybe you'll never understand this is how we live. And I want you to see how we live. Kings, they get served. You know, in order to understand your kingdom, you have to understand your king. Kings get served. Not this one. He said, no, I didn't come to serve, be served. I came to serve. I didn't come to take, I came to give. I didn't come so that I could count you. How many are there that are subject to me? How big is my kingdom? I didn't come like that. I came, to give my life to you as a ransom for you. I didn't come to be punitive, could have. I didn't come with all my power, could have. I came to forgive and restore, even when it was hard. And I laid down my power. I had the power of God, not some human. I laid it down, and I became a baby, a child, one of you, to live among you. I came to show you, not to tell you. I came to put on display what God is really, really like. In order to understand your kingdom, you have to understand this is your king. Which leads me to this. As I think about the world, as you think about the world, there are times where we're like, man, I wish that could change. And I wish this. I've heard a bunch of people, and I want to breathe some hope into this place today, because I've heard some people that would say, man, when we were younger, whether it was the 90s or the 80s or the 70s or the 60s, it was just a better world. And it's so hard. Can you imagine trying to raise kids in this world today? And I go, well, part of me thinks it's the best time of all to raise kids, because we just beat Ohio State 4 times in a row. This is a great time to be alive right now, right? But then I think about, would we be the people that are filled with despair about the shape of the world? When the shape of the world was, there's an emperor who's issuing a command. Everybody jumps and moves. That kingdom, in order to know your kingdom, that kingdom had a king. So does this one. And that king, Jesus, had 12. And the mystery that is actually history is they began to live it. They didn't just look at Jesus. They did. They didn't just study Jesus. Oh, they did. They didn't just didn't learn just the things of Jesus. They learned it. But then they lived it. And in so living it, it left Ehrman in a place. He's going, how did a forbidden religion actually end up shaping the entire world? It's because this kingdom moves in that way. And if you want to usher in the kingdom of your rabbi Jesus, you're going to have to understand Jesus. Understand him. Understand his ways. And then not just understand it, but study it. And then think about, how does this apply to my life? And how do I now live? And if he was a forgiving God in really hard places, then I have to figure out how to do that. If he had hope for really difficult spaces, then I need hope for those difficult spaces. When you close your eyes and you begin to envision Jesus, it's the most important thing. Whatever comes to your mind is the most important thing about you because of this right here. If we are to usher in a better world, if we are to usher in the very reign and the rule of our rabbi Jesus, we have to understand who Jesus is, or we're going to live in the wrong way and usher in the wrong thing. And when we close our eyes, what comes to your mind when you start to think about Jesus? Do you see Zacchaeus? Do you see him over there going, I need a friend. I don't have any. I'm a tax collector. I'm not liked by either side. It's just here I am, stuck in the middle and without anybody. And Jesus says, I see you. If you don't have lunch plans, I'll come over to your house. I'd love to sit with you and hang out with you. Really? Yeah. I'll be a friend to the friendless. That. Do you see Bartimaeus? He's on the side of the road, and it's because that's where he sat. They would place him there, and he just sat there, and he would beg all day long because he was blind. He had no other means of making it through the next day and the next day. And so he heard Jesus is coming down the road, and he had heard about Jesus, and he started crying out, Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me. And the crowd's like, man, Bartimaeus, would you just be quiet? This is a rabbi. He's important. He's got better things to do than you. And Jesus said, no, I don't. That's how you think. That's not who I am. Bartimaeus, what can I do for you? What do you need? Do you see him? When you close your eyes and you think about Jesus, do you see Matthew, similar to Zacchaeus? Do you see him? But wow, Jesus went to a level with Matthew that he didn't just have lunch with him, but he said, Matthew, you're a tax collector. You're in that same middle that Zacchaeus was in, but I see you, and I see hope for you, and I see what you could actually give your life to that could change the world. How about you be one of the original 12 Galileans that could shape this entire world? Come follow me. Matthew's like, me? I'm in. I didn't know that I would ever have a chance at this. I'm in. Do you see somebody that's not worth being forgiven at all? Not really. And you can put anybody into that place because that's true of everybody that's ever walked the earth. If we are in a place where we have done wrong, we deserve to be punished for that. And yet, go ahead and put yourself, do you see yourself in there? And do you see God making a move to you, Jesus making a move to you and say, I know what you did. Forgiven. Restored. Do you hear the words of the Old Testament? I'm the one who forgives your sin for my own sake. For me. That's what you mean to me. For me, because being separated from you is not what I long for. For me, that we might be like this. If you're going to usher in the kingdom of your rabbi, Jesus, which we are going to, right? We're going to. We have to understand our king. And then not just understand. Not just know. But say, my turn. Or to hear our king say, your turn, when he said it like this. He says, as the Father sent me, I put the love of God on display for the world, and it shaped the world, changed the world. As the Father sent me, now it's your turn. Now I send you to be incredible news to this world. Father, that is not small. It is massive. And as we step into this Advent season and begin to peel back the layers of this incredible move of yours to the planet, and it was a strategic move to shape the earth forever, one person at a time. Here we stand in a different generation at a different time with the same charge. We know you, Jesus, you're our rabbi. You are our king, and it is your kingdom, your ways, that we have an opportunity to not just pray for, but to actually do, to go live, to go be, that this world might experience again, what it has already. We pray this in your name. Amen.
Thanks for listening. Our hope is that you are encouraged and that God revealed a piece of his character to you through this message. For service times or for more information about how you can be a part of Fairhaven, you can visit us at fhchurch.org. Have a great week.